Life has many different teachers. Growing up, I learned many valuable lessons on dirt roads. I learned how to drive on dirt roads. I learned how to work hard on dirt roads. I learned how to be content on dirt roads. I also learned that cars don't stay clean very long on dirt roads. Today we're going to take a trip down a couple dirt roads. On one road we'll find Philip and the eunuch. On the other we'll find Saul and Jesus. And there are some big lessons for us to learn on these two roads. Let's travel first to this road leading out of Jerusalem. I want us to take a critical look at a question that the eunuch asked Philip. In Acts chapter 8, verse 36, after Philip was led by the Spirit to the eunuch has some questions about what he's reading from the prophet Isaiah. We know that Philip talks to him about Jesus. That's how the message is described. He shared Jesus with him. As they went along that road, they came to some water. And the eunuch said, "Look, water, what prevents me from being baptized?" Take a moment and think about the question that's asked here by the eunuch. What comes to your mind when you hear this question? What prevents me from being baptized? After learning about Jesus with the help of Philip, the eunuch desired to be baptized. And he sees water and he responds with this statement and then a question. What is preventing me? What's holding me back? Well, let's dig into this question. What could have prevented the eunuch from being baptized? Well, there are a lot of things, actually. What prevents people from being baptized today? After people hear about Jesus, after the gospel is presented, what are some things that hold people back? What are some things that are preventing them from taking that step, from making that commitment to Jesus? Well, for some people, pride gets in the way. We want to be our own boss. We want to live life on our own terms. And to submit to somebody else is something that can be just a little bit too much to ask. For some people, it's a love of a sinful life. Maybe we're in love with the life we're leading. Maybe we're in love with the sin and that fleeting pleasure that it's bringing to us. Maybe it's just too hard to change. When we look at Acts chapter 2, verse 38, Peter preaching here on the day of Pentecost, he links repentance and baptism together to receiving forgiveness of sins. It's hard to change. It's hard to turn away from sin. It's hard to let go of certain things in our life. There may be things that we're holding on to that we just don't want to let go of. Things that we just don't want to change. Perhaps it's a lack of commitment. When we look at the parable of the sower and you look at the different soils that are described there by Jesus, some of the seed did not last. Some of the seed did not produce in its time because there was no commitment, no root there within the soil. And then for some, it just might be fear. Fear of what other people might think. Fear of what this might do to my relationships. What this might do to my job. So when you look at that question, what prevents me from being baptized? Well, there's a lot of things that can get in the way. There are many different things that can prevent us from making a commitment to Jesus Christ. Our initial thought when we read this question that's posed by the eunuch probably are attached to the eunuch himself. We think about barriers that he's facing, barriers that may be present within his life. Were there other potential barriers, even beyond the eunuch himself? What about Philip? Have you ever thought about this question from the standpoint of Philip? How did Philip feel about this question? Remember who Philip is. He's not one of the 12. He's not one of the apostles. He's not that Philip. He is one of the seven mentioned in Acts chapter 6. In Acts 21, he's described as an evangelist. So he was going all over as Jesus wanted, sharing the gospel message. But bigger than that, concerning our question, Philip was a Jew. He reflects the conservative religion of his time. He had standing in the old way, the old law, the Old Testament covenant between God and Israel. He was a part of that. He was part of God's chosen people. And according to the law, a eunuch is excluded from the assembly. And as a good conservative Jew, Philip should have viewed the eunuch as damaged goods and refused to have anything to do with him, much less baptize him. And if Philip baptized the eunuch, he would be breaking a serious rule within Judaism that he was raised to respect and follow, a rule that determined your standing with God. So this question that the eunuch asks, I'm sure there are some things within the eunuch's life himself that he's having to overcome, but we also need to think about this question from the standpoint of Philip. You know, with the eunuch, maybe he's thinking, how will this affect my job? How will this affect my life? How will this affect my future? But the question is far more reaching than just the eunuch. It was a big question for Philip as well. In fact, it was a big question for all Jews living here in the first century, because this is a tension that carries through the early church. What do you do? Now, this is what the Jews were faced with. What do you do when your religion isn't big enough for God? What do you do when your rules and codes and laws simply aren't enough anymore? What do you do when your system falls apart because the new thing that God is doing is bigger, better, and beyond anything that you ever imagined? This isn't just a tension that Philip faced. It isn't just a question for Philip on this road leading out of Jerusalem. It's one of the central struggles of the early church. How do we overcome these cultural barriers that are in place? How do we overcome this tension between the Jew and the Gentile? How can the Gentile realize that God has a bigger plan that encompasses all the world and not just for Jews? Because for many of the first followers of the way, Jesus was wrapped in layer upon layer of Jewish culture, custom, and lifestyle. A Jewish Messiah from the line of the Jewish King David, raised by Jewish parents, in a Jewish religion, within a Jewish nation. For Philip, the eunuch's question about baptism raises a far deeper set of questions about what it even looks like to be a follower of God. But Philip wasn't the only one facing this dilemma. A man named Paul confronted this tension again and again in the early days of the church. We first meet Paul when he was known as Saul, when he was breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. And here we're going to learn some other lessons on another road. Saul was on a road that was leading to Damascus to continue his persecution of Jesus. When Jesus appeared to him, Damascus is a city in Syria. Damascus isn't in Jerusalem. Damascus, we know, is even in the news here today. It's beyond Jerusalem. It's beyond Judea. Beyond Samaria. And Saul has a concern. You see, Saul was working against Jesus. If you remember last week in Acts chapter 1, Jesus commissions his apostles to take the gospel to Jerusalem, to Judea, to Samaria, and to the remote corners of the world. Jesus wanted the message of his gospel spread everywhere. And so the apostles were to go from Jerusalem and fan out from there all over the world. Saul is fighting against Jesus. So Saul is trying to bring everything back. He's trying to stop the progress of the gospel. He's trying to halt it, trying to bring it back. He wants it going in reverse. He doesn't want the gospel moving forward. Saul's concern is that the gospel of Jesus has left Jerusalem. That maybe it even went beyond Judea and Samaria, all the way to Syria. It's what Jesus told the apostles to make happen. And it's what Saul is trying to prevent. So Saul is arresting followers of Jesus, followers of the way. And he's trying to bring them back to Jerusalem. And so he's traveling to Damascus, and his plan is to arrest Christians and bring them back to Jerusalem so that they could be in prison. Saul wants the gospel to travel in the opposite direction. from the direction that Jesus gave his disciples. Saul wants to bring it back so that it can't reach the remote corners of the world. And so on this road, traveling to Damascus, Saul has a blinding encounter with Jesus. And it was an encounter that changed everything for Saul. Saul is told to get up to go to Damascus, where he makes contact with Ananias, a follower of Jesus. And naturally, Ananias is terrified because Saul, after all, is breathing murderous threats against the church, arresting people, watching as they're killed in the case of Stephen. So you can imagine what Ananias is thinking. You want me to talk to who? Send me somewhere else. Give me another appointment. But Ananias talks with Saul. And we know that Saul was changed. Even on that road, Saul simply said, "Just tell me what to do. Whatever you want me to do, Lord, I'm willing to do it." Saul was changed by his encounter with Jesus. And over time, people realized that Saul was different. In Jesus, he had a task. He had a specific mission for Saul. He was to take the gospel to the Gentiles. And it was a mission that was filled with struggle. Here in Acts 9, the Lord says to him, "Go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the sons of Israel." This is the Lord speaking to Ananias. "You go to this man because I have something special for him to do. For I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake." We consider all of the barriers that Paul faced in fulfilling this mission. He suffered a lot. He suffered greatly. We think about the physical struggle. We think about the emotional barriers. But what about the cultural struggles? Do you see what Paul is supposed to do? He is supposed to take the gospel to the Gentiles. Try to understand, try to fathom in your mind all of the struggle that Paul would face from the Jewish people when striving to accomplish this mission. Do we think about those cultural struggles? Even beyond the emotional pain, beyond the physical pain, beyond all of that, there were these huge cultural barriers in place that God has commissioned Paul to work through. And so we skip ahead to Acts chapter 15, and we see Paul doing that. "Some men came down from Judea and began teaching the brethren, 'Unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved.'" Now think back to that other road we traveled down. Think back to that road that led out of Jerusalem, where the eunuch asked Philip, "What prevents me from being baptized?" Think about that question as we just read verse 1. Think about that question with these words in your mind: "Unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved." And when Paul and Barnabas had great dissension and debate with them, the brethren determined that Paul and Barnabas and some others of them should go up to Jerusalem to the apostles and elders concerning this issue. You see some of the cultural struggles that existed in the first century? You see some of the barriers that were in place? Maybe we think about that question that the eunuch asked just a little bit differently now. Maybe we can see it even beyond the eunuch. Maybe we can see it from the perspective of Philip. What was Philip thinking when the eunuch asked him, "What prevents me from being baptized?" Maybe it was a question more for Philip than it was for the eunuch himself. But you see here in Acts chapter 15, Paul, he's trying to work through some of these struggles. Because it wasn't just a Philip problem, it was a first century church problem. Why the great dissension? Why was there this big argument, this sharp dispute? Well, first notice the direction. These men were coming from Judea to Antioch. Antioch was one of those non-Jewish ends of the earth type places. The kind of place that Jesus told his apostles to take the gospel. And it had gone there. The gospel had made it out of Jerusalem. It had made it out of Judea. It had made it to Antioch. And people are responding to Jesus, responding to the message of his death, burial, and resurrection. But there were some struggles. These religious people are coming from Judea to Antioch. And they're not coming with good news. They're coming to place some restrictions upon these new Christians, telling these new followers of Jesus about the old religious rituals, about the old things that they're going to need to go through. Notice the language that they used. This ritual of circumcision, which was part of the Old Testament covenant between God and Israel, that is now equated with salvation within the New Testament, within the New Covenant. They attach salvation directly to circumcision of old. Unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved. Salvation flows through Jesus Christ, not Moses. All we need for salvation is Jesus. And throughout the New Testament, when anybody tried to add to the plan, when anybody tried to add to the gospel, you see, we can change the gospel not only by erasing things from it, but we can also change it by adding things to it. And so here in the first century, people kind of had this thought. Okay, we'll follow Jesus, but we're going to add some things. Let's add some of these old things to Jesus, and we will equate all of this to salvation. Jesus plus Moses equals salvation. That's wrong. Jesus equals salvation. Jesus plus circumcision equals salvation. That's wrong. Jesus equals salvation. Jesus plus following the old ways, the old traditions, that equals salvation. That's wrong. Jesus equals salvation. But you have all of these cultural barriers that Philip was faced with, that Paul was faced with. And not only are they still stuck back here in the Old Testament, but you have these people propagating this false teaching. They're spreading the wrong gospel in the wrong direction. And it makes Paul furious. In one letter, his rant reaches such a pitch that he says he wishes these people would just emasculate themselves. Circumcision doesn't equate to salvation. Following Moses doesn't equate to salvation. It's all about Christ. For Paul, there are two fundamental modes of existence, two realities in which humanity can exist. The old condition of darkness and sin and slavery, and the new light of light and forgiveness and freedom. In his letter to the Romans, Paul calls the old condition the body of sin. This is the dark side of human existence, the sin and death to which all humans are subject. In another place in Romans, he refers to it as the body of death. That is the old way. This is our reality without Jesus, sin and death. Initially, the Jews opposed taking the gospel beyond Jerusalem. They opposed taking the gospel to Samaria, to the Gentiles. But upon relenting, some of the Jews, they would allow the gospel to spread, but then they would bring the old ways back in. And that's what's happening right here in Antioch. These people, now keep in mind what's happened in Antioch. These people have heard the gospel. They've heard about Jesus. And they've responded with a yes. They've been baptized into Christ. They're added to the church. They're saved. They're leading this life in this new reality of Jesus. New life is surging through them. They have a new mission, a new purpose. They have a new hope, the hope of heaven. And then these religious leaders arrive on the scene who are still trapped in the old reality. And they tell them that unless they take part in the religious customs of Moses and the old law, none of this means anything. Paul sees this insistence as a form of violence. What he's against are these religious rituals, that replace the blessings that are brought about through Jesus. When people are manipulated with guilt and fear, when they are told that if they don't do certain things that don't line up with God's new plan, that they'll be illegitimate, judged, condemned, sent to hell forever, that's violence. And Paul continually returns to his conviction that there are these two fundamental ways to exist: the body of sin and death, or the body of Christ. Jesus is the transport from one to the other. How do we move from this body of sin and death into this new body with Jesus? How do we make that transport? How do we become transformed? The only way to move from sin and death to a relationship with God is through Jesus Christ. The only way for us to make that exodus, the only way for us to cross that Red Sea is through Jesus. He's the only bridge to leave sin and death behind and exist in this new reality, this new relationship with God. Isn't that the ultimate exodus of humanity? To leave sin behind and walk with Jesus? You talk about an exodus. To leave death behind and walk with Jesus? That's a big exodus. To leave condemnation and guilt and oppression behind so that we can walk with our Savior? Paul emphasizes this truth throughout his letters. In 2 Corinthians 5, we learn that through Christ we are a new creature. The old's passed away, the old body of sin, the old body of death, it's gone. We are a new creation, a new life, a new hope, a new purpose. And then in Galatians chapter 6, for neither is circumcision anything, nor uncircumcision. It doesn't matter. That's gone. That's in the past. It's not about that anymore. But a new creation. And what Paul wants people to know, and isn't this his mission? Isn't this what God told him to do? Paul wants everybody to know that this is for everybody. It's not just the Jews leaving Egypt anymore. It's not just the Jews crossing through the Red Sea. This is about all humanity having access to God. All humanity being invited to be a part of this covenant. Because God is doing something new. He's doing something bigger, something better. It's not about the old law anymore. It's not about the old covenant. It's not about Moses. This is something new. Which takes us back to this road we began on. This road leaving Jerusalem, where Philip is standing with an African, an Ethiopian, who's been taught the gospel, who's been taught about Jesus Christ. In this eunuch, he has a question. Look, Philip, there's water. What prevents me from being baptized? Philip would have been circumcised when he was 8 days old. He shared in the covenant blessings of the Old Testament. He was God's chosen person. Philip would have been taught that this ritual of circumcision was an absolute necessity, something that must be done to be in good standing with God. But what about the eunuch? That practice was everything to the Jews. It meant nothing to this man from Ethiopia. What prevented him from being baptized? What prevented him from having a walk with God? The eunuch was ready. Was Philip willing? Now look at this picture. It's probably something you've never noticed. Luke wanted to be clear that Philip was willing. Luke wanted the reader to know that Philip was rising above the past, that he was moving past the old covenant, the Old Testament, moving past the point where only Jews could have access to God. And so he ordered the chariot to stop. And they both went down into the water, Philip as well as the eunuch. And he baptized him. Luke wanted to show us the significance of Philip this Jewish man baptizing the eunuch from Ethiopia because it was significant. And this is the story of Acts. It's the story of the early church. It's the story of Jesus as it left Jerusalem and headed to the ends of the earth. It's the story of 1,000 little everyday decisions that these first Christians made to free the message, to make it available to all people, to free it from its cultural and religious trappings, so that it would truly be good news for everyone who encountered it, even eunuchs from Ethiopia. Even this person from a remote corner of the world. I would be amiss if I didn't challenge us to do exactly what Philip did here in Acts 8. Because there are still cultural barriers. There are still obstacles that we have to overcome. Still challenges that are facing us. We must do what Philip did. We must do what Paul did. The gospel of Jesus is for everybody. Jesus wanted it to go everywhere. He wanted it to go to Judea, to Samaria. He wanted it to go to the remote corners of the world. And he wants it to go to this city. He wants it to go to this state. He wants it to go across this nation, across the world. It's great for us to be involved in mission works. It's great for us to be involved in Nigeria, to be involved in Haiti, to be involved in Brazil, to be involved in India. But if we are not doing this, what we just read, right here in our own backyards, something's wrong. Something is wrong if we don't do for other people here in our community what Philip did for this eunuch. Just tell people about Jesus. That's who they need. They need Jesus Christ because He is the one who can save. It doesn't matter where they're from. It doesn't matter the color of their skin. It doesn't matter whether male or female. It doesn't matter whether educated or uneducated. We just need Jesus. Let's not fail in doing what we see modeled throughout the book of Acts, throughout the history of the church. This morning, if we can do anything for you, if we can help you in any way, if you need to be baptized into Christ, if you need to do what the eunuch did here in Acts 8, there's nothing preventing you. We would be honored to baptize you into Jesus Christ this morning, knowing that Jesus is the source of salvation. If we can help you with that, or if you need the prayers of this church family, we invite you to come as we stand and sing together.